So welcome to this next lecture on virtual machines. I'm sorry that I'm a little bit late. I had kind of a technical discussion on the telephone and could not stop it so quickly. So yesterday we made quite some progress by providing code for simple expressions, for local variables, and even for functions. So we realized that when we generate code for a function, then we generate code for the construction of a functional value, which is an F object in the heap. And that F object contains a pointer, a code pointer, which points, or the address, if you like, the address of the real code, which then will be executed when the function is called. And that code essentially consisted of the V code for the body of the function, and we decorated it with a test arg, targ K, and a return K. And this test arg K and this return K, we kind of left them obscure, but noted that they are responsible for checking over and under supply with arguments. Now, that is what we did for a function. Now comes the dual, if you like, namely the code for a function application. So that one thing is the, as in the C machine, we provided code for functions, and then we had also to provide code for a function call. And that's the same here. So now what will we do for such a function application? So here is a form of it. So E prime is an expression which is meant to be to evaluate to a functional value. And then there are actual parameters, and the actual parameters are this E1, E0 to EM minus 1. Now, what will we have to do? So the first thing is, this is like in C, we provide a fresh stack frame within which the function application will be evaluated. This is like an auxiliary computation, which we kind of nest into the current application. So therefore, we have to allocate a stack frame. And then we have to pass the parameters. And passing parameters, okay, so that now it depends on whether we are in a call, whether the language has a call by need semantics or a call by value semantics. In case of a call by value semantics, we have to evaluate the actual parameters to values, and we recall we do that from right to left. In a call by need in language like Haskell, then we will not evaluate the parameters, but we will construct closures. So we will apply C code, disclosure construction code to all the expressions of the arguments, and then have references to all disclosures on top of the stack. Once we have done the passing of the parameters, we proceed by evaluating the function itself to an F object, and then we apply the function. Okay? So that means the more complicated case that we have call by need, the code looks as follows. So here, this is the code for this expression, and here is the V code. So now please note, so this is a V code in a call-by-need programming language. Even in a call-by-need programming language, you might want to determine the value of an expression. So of the whole expression, we want to have the value, but it's a call-by-need environment. That means we try to compute as little as possible. That is, we try to compute as many closures as possible. So that means, now, here is what we have to do. So we mark off the stack frame, however that is done. So we don't know how to do it, but we can construct an we can provide an instruction for it, namely this mark thing. And then in the end, we do the apply, which is also something new, a new instruction which we have to implement later. And then in between these two, we have to do two things. First is passing the parameters, and then is evaluating the code of the function. And now let us look in detail. As you see, the arguments are evaluated from right to left. You see that here, for the first, the rightmost argument, this has the stack distance has increased by 3. And the reason is, why? What would you guess? Where would that come from? So here we had stacked, some stack distance, and now we note that the rightmost argument is evaluated for a stack distance SD plus 3. Now the reason is that some three things must have been pushed onto the stack. Yeah, so that's kind of the natural explanation. And that means that this mark, so from that you can deduce that the mark instruction, whatever it is, it will push three things. And you may wonder what kind of these three things might be. So I guess this you can easily guess. So the first thing is? Stack pointer, no. Well, typically we wouldn't, the frame pointer, the old frame pointer. So then the old PC, because we have to continue after the call. So these are the two things. And what else? Please louder. The return pointer? The return value, no. No, that is kind of the old global vector, yes, because inside the call you will have the new global vector. And so the old global vector somehow must be saved. So it's like always, if we have 10 registers for the local to describe the local processing state, and I enter a new context, and I have to save all the 10 pointer, all the 10 registers. Here we have 3 registers: the PC, the frame pointer, and the global pointer. And so we have to save 3 things. Very good. and here you see one more detail. So here is the A, the mark instruction in the C machine mark instruction. There was also a mark instruction which also kind of marked off the stack frame. It had no parameter because it kind of it had no parameter. But here it has a parameter, and here it has it receives the old PC, if you like. So the next instruction to be executed, which is this one. We place it, we put it into the instruction. So that means this A will be the value which we save as the continuation address inside the among the 3 organizational cells. Okay. So then now we have, by that we have learned already quite a bit. Without knowing what this instruction really will be, we have at least a great understanding now what it should do. Now, then I said here, therefore, stack distance plus 3. For the next argument, stack distance plus 4. And that is natural because we push one more, we leave one more reference after the other on top of the stack. So therefore, the stack distance grows, until we arrive at the E0, and then we have kind of pushed. So for the E0, we have pushed M minus 1. We find there, before E0, M minus 1 arguments together with the 3 organizational cells, which is altogether M plus 2. Things which have been left on top of the stack. Now we enter the, now we come to the E prime. So while we kind of might have closures for the arguments, we cannot construct closure for the function, because the function must be evaluated, otherwise we can't start evaluating the body. Yeah? So therefore, this is code V, therefore, which we do for the function. And the stack distance is M plus 3, the three organizational cells and the M parameters. Okay? So now then, the situation is then, hopefully, that we have the references to the parameters, on top of it, the reference to the function, and then we have to do kind of the call. And that is, we don't know yet how to do it, but we provide an instruction for it, which is this apply. Okay? That's it. Now we know how to, and one more note, if we have OCaml instead of Haskell, then the passing of the parameters will be not by need, but by value. That is, in these places, we will do all code V. So then, just to do an example to see how so even if we don't know how mark and apply are implemented, we can produce code now, because this simply means we simply literally apply the scheme of code generation, and we can do that here for a super duper important expression, namely F applied to 42. Now what is F? We assume that F is a local, perhaps, with relative address 2, and that the stack distance is 2. What would we then do? So in order to do this function application F applied to 42, we first have to mark off the stack frame, where the A here, refers to the first address after the call. Then we have to do to pass the parameter, in this case by value, because we have a call by value in a programming language, and that is we construct the value for the argument. This is load constant 42, and then make basic, because the function expects the value in the heap and the reference to them on the stack. That's a good point. For the moment, I have not explained to you how closures are constructed. And there are two things. First, you can construct. We will see how closures will be constructed, and we will provide certain optimizations because in some cases, constructing the closure is kind of ridiculous, because constructing the value is no more expensive than constructing a closure will eventually do the value. And that means in this particular case, we would do exactly the same. Yeah, very good point. So now comes the code V for the function. Now code V for the function means it is F is a local variable. The code V of it will kind of, for a variable, is that do this get var thing. And then do the get var thing. And that means here the relative address is 2, the stack distance is 4, 4 minus is 6, 6 minus 2 is 4. So therefore we have a push log 4 in order to retrieve the reference to F. And then we do the apply. And that's it. Okay? So you understand the code in detail? So, and now we can even do a little bit more complicated thing, namely a full program like this one. Let A equal 17 in let F, this function here, and then we do this. We apply F to 42. And how would that be done? So first we have this local we start. So it's a call by assuming that we have a call by value programming language, and we start off with stack distance 0. Then we first we construct the right hand, the value for the right hand side of to compute, to evaluate the right hand side of the A, and this is just a constant, so we load the constant 17 and make a basic value out of it. Then we have to construct the value for F, that is, we have to do this one, and that is the code for doing a, for creating a functional value. So we have to first to construct the global vector. This happens here. So how is the global vector consists of A? A has I may write it down. A is mapped to is a local variable and gets relative address 1. So therefore, this, in order to retrieve, so here at that point, we have stack distance 1. The A has relative address 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. Therefore, we have this push log 0 here to get the A. Okay, so then we do the, then we make the vector, and then we make the functional value where A is the code for the body. I mark the code for the body is here until the between test arc 1 and return 1, and then we jump to the we jump behind that code, and that is, we continue now with code generating for, we have done the functional value for F, then we now have to generate code for the main expression of the, which is F applied to 42. This is a functional function application, and the code for the function application is here. And that is exactly what we have seen here, because at this position B, we have stack distance 2, and that is, we have at stack distance 2 where the F is a local variable with relative address 2, and that is exactly the situation where we have produced code on the second, on the last slide. That is, this is the green code block, which we kind of copy in, and then this yellow code block, this one here, for the body of the function, this we have already translated last time. So it has, it essentially has to produce A plus B after decorated with test arc 1 and return 1. Okay? And so there's one more thing. In the very end, we have this slide, in slide 2 instruction. This kind of copies the value which has at runtime been computed for this main part and copies it down into the stack, and by that squeezes out the space for the A and the F, for the locals which are no longer visible behind the expression. Therefore, this slide 2.
And the 2 is used because the stack distance is 3. And why 2?
Because of the A and the F. So these are two locals which are kind of squeezed out. If it were 10 locals, then slide 10. Okay?
But shouldn't the F get the distance 1? Just back what you wrote.
No. A stays local. A is only, A turns into a global inside the F. But the F outside is, so inside that, inside here, A is global, but this F here is a local which is set on top of A. So here we have the A, and here we have the F. And this F thing goes to a functional a value with this arc pointer, with the code pointer, the arc pointer, and the global pointer. And here, this is the A. And inside the code block for A, there A is local.
Global.
Sorry. Okay.
Where is the global vector loaded for that? In which step is the global vector?
That is part of the apply. So when going, that we have not yet explained. So when, as soon as you enter the function, at some point you have to, once before with the marking, the old global vector has been saved away, and with the apply you may kind of restore the new, set the new global vector.
And where does it come from?
It's from the functional value. The functional value, every functional value contains its own global vector. So, now we have, in our little discussion, we have already realized that we have three organizational cells, and then the old frame pointer, the old global pointer, and the old PC, or the kind of the continuation address, this A thing, must be stored in that portion. Then we have a freedom in which order to place them. And here I kind of have the order kind of to make it resemble as much to the stack organization of the C machine. That means the PC old is on top, then comes the frame pointer, and then comes the next reference, whatever that might be, in this case the global pointer. So the global pointer has relative address minus 2 compared to the new frame pointer. Okay, so that's kind of the organization of the stack frame. And now, as we have decided on that, we now can immediately invent this instruction mark A. Because this A is this PC old, or the next instruction to be executed after the call, and that is put on top of the three things. And below, here, we do the old frame pointer. That means this value will be saved here, and the current GP, global pointer, this will be put first. Now that's it. So it's very natural, nothing, no mystery, just what we expect. Okay? So this does not mean that value has been saved, but it's still the old value. And we need the old GP, why? Because we have to evaluate still the arguments. The arguments are evaluated after the marking of the new stack frame. Yeah, and so therefore the old GP and the old frame pointer are still in use and must be used, because we have to still do evaluate the arguments and the function E prime. Now the most complicated thing is this apply function. So what does apply have to do? So we have actual the arguments, and on top we have this the pointer to some F object. Now, then this apply thing has to unpack this F object. Why? This F object may contain an argument pointer, so some further arguments. These have to be pushed on top of the stack to kind of prolong the list of arguments. Then it has a global pointer. This global pointer must be put into the GP, and it has a code pointer, and this code pointer must be moved into the PC, and then computation continues. Yeah? So that's exactly what's natural. You kind of take the arguments which you have accumulated in the F object, you put them onto the stack to prolong the list of arguments. You kind of set the global pointer to the value, to the global vector inside this F object, and you jump to the beginning of the code.
The argument pointer, or this argument vector, was for undersupplying the function, right?
So well, when if you have already, you have a three argument function, you have provided two, then you wrap it into a new F object at some point, which is a function with two arguments.
And the AP would have two arguments.
Yes. So And that's kind of, we have to make a little bit care that in the way how we kind of, that the order in the arguments is the same as the order in which, so when we pack the argument vector, we kind of have to do in the same way, unpack it. So here it is in the following way, that the first element of the argument pointer is put on top of the stack first. And so on. Yeah. So that was the... So that means the first is put first, and that means the last of the argument vector is put last on top of the stack. So that is the innermost thing. So the innermost thing is to because the innermost is on top of the stack. And that kind of decision, so this is one design choice which we have done here. This we have to keep in mind when we put things, when we construct the argument vector, that we do the innermost, the leftmost is on the the rightmost in the argument vector. Okay, so now we have the marking and the apply. So this is great. Now only we have two mysteries left. One mystery is this test, this TARC K instruction, and the other one is the return K instruction. So let us, we have to start with one, so let us check, consider this test ARC K instruction first. So that is the first in the code of the function. So that it is the first instruction which is executed after the apply. So first the apply, then the test arc. Now what should the test arc do? Okay, so it is exactly this situation. I have the function expects 20 arguments, but I have only 12 on the stack. Okay, so then I cannot execute the code of the function. What I can do is I can take the 12, put them into the argument vector, and construct an F object again and return this F object. That's what one would do there. So this is for undersupply. And now the question is, how do I check, how do I determine the number of arguments which are available at that particular call? Well, then we recall our organization of a stack frame. So FP points to the first cell below the arguments, and the stack, the current stack pointer, points to the last argument. So stack pointer minus frame pointer is exactly the number of arguments. Yeah. So in particular, if no argument is on top of the stack, stack pointer is equal to the frame pointer. So this is the we do this difference and we compare it with the K. K is the number of arguments which we require for the function to run. So if SP minus FP is less than K, then we have an undersupply, and then we wrap again a new the functional object and do nothing. Yeah. So this test arc K is we kind of decompose it into three, if you like, micro instructions. So first it consists of, we check whether we have an undersupply. If there's an undersupply, what do we do? We have to reconstruct the functional value. So for that we have to kind of put the argument, have to create somehow the global vector for this thing, and we have to wrap, we have to construct, put all the arguments which are there into an argument vector. This is this instruction here, and then we have to wrap the functional value up by putting the corresponding global vector, by putting the code pointer and then by, yeah, and then in the end, the function, so the result of the current function application was this functional value, is this functional value, and that we have to return as the result. That is, we have to pop the current environment in order to return this result. So this is another, this is the third. So this is the first, this is the second, and this is the third component of this test arcing. And we have to implement these three operations in sequence. And to do all them in, yeah. So here is this making the argument of the argument vector. So we said the topmost thing is put to the very as the rightmost thing, and the innermost the outermost argument is put in front. So this is how we do the wrap the argument arguments into a vector. Then we pop the arguments from the stack and instead put a reference to this argument vector on top of the stack. Okay, so that's what this make vector zero does. And the number of elements put into this vector is determined by doing the doing sp minus fp. Now this wrapping, what should that do? The wrapping expects on top of the stack this argument vector. Now what would we have to do? Well, where do we get the global vector from? Well, the global vector is that vector which is the GP points to, because that was what we did we have set already by the apply the argument vector to the argument the global vector to the global vector of the function. So that is again, so this GP, therefore the content is put here into the GP position. This one is put into the AP position. And now what is the code pointer? Where do we get that from? So you notice this wrap has no further arguments. So where do we get the code pointer from? Now I claim we can retrieve it by a little bit of calculation from the current PC. Because the current PC, the instruction which we are currently executing is the test arc K. This is the very first instruction of the code. So the code address of this test arc K is the right one. But the PC has already been incremented by one, because we do the increment before we execute the instruction. So therefore we have to decrement it again to get the code address of the test arc K. And that is the thing which we put here. So this is 41, while the PC is 42. Okay? So that is what the wrapping would do. And then we have all three components for the functional object. So this means we remove this and push the new object, the new functional object. Okay. Now what will we do? Then the third component then. So this was the make vector zero, the wrapping, and now comes the popping of the environment. So the popping of the environment in general, what would we do? So we have the frame pointer pointing to three organizational cells, which are the registers of the caller. And on top of the stack, we have the return value, which we have computed. Now, what would we do? We would like to return that value, which we have computed, the return value, as the result of the function call, return to the caller, and that means we have to put the three registers into their places. So we have to put the set the PC old, set the frame pointer, set the frame pointer by putting that here, and set restoring the old global pointer. That's it. And then, having done all this restoration, we ultimately put the stack pointer, set the stack pointer to the frame pointer -2, because frame pointer, from there we have three organizational cells, but the lowest most is occupied by the return value. Yeah. Okay, so that's what we would do at the popping of the environment. And then now seeing, putting everything together. So that was the situation before the test arc K. And then we, if we do then make vector 0, that would mean these three things, these things here, if we make test arc K now, and then we, if we make this vector, sorry, this make vector 0 would kind of put these things into a vector, so that happens here. Then we wrap this vector into a functional value, which happens now here. And so please note, so that this 42 becomes this 41 here. And then we do the popping of the environment, which kind of copies this value down in that position and restores the other registers, and that is then the result of the function application is this functional value. Okay, so that was the test, this test arc K, and you see it was not so complicated once we have kind of thought a little while for what it should do. Now the returning, this return K, this is the remaining mystery. This is executed after the body has been evaluated. Now what should that do? Well, if all arguments are consumed, then the result which we have returned is just the result. So we do pop the environment and return that value. So that's kind of the natural thing. But there could be another situation which we have to deal with, and that is we have a function with two arguments, but as actual parameters we have supplied 7. So that means the function application has only consumed 2 of the arguments. So 5 are remaining. How can that be? So this can be if the result of our current function application was another function which will consume further arguments from the stack. Yeah. So that is kind of tested by the by this return K. Yeah. So if there's an oversupply, then the body must evaluate to a function which then consumes the rest, and so we can then do the apply. An implicit apply to evaluate that function. So that is what, therefore, the this return K thing does. It first checks whether all arguments have been consumed. How can that be? Well, K arguments have been consumed by the present function. On top of the K arguments, there is the single result which we have computed. So this, the difference, if the difference between the stack pointer and the frame pointer is k plus 1, then everything is fine, and we can we are done with the function call, and that is we can do a popenv. So now it comes as a help that we have this micro instruction pop environment because we can reuse it here. So otherwise, if the other situation is that the that we have more than k plus 1, that the distance between SP and FP is more than k plus 1, and that means we have, what can we do? So then we squeeze out k arguments because these have been consumed. We do that by our super duper slide k instruction. So this squeezes out the consumed arguments, and then we have again the situation, a pointer to a functional value on top of arguments, and then we can call the apply. So this is again a function which we have already implemented. So in that sense, we use as an instruction which we already had as a micro instruction. Yes.
But at what point did we jump back to the...
What do you mean jump back?
Go back to where the function was...
Whenever that result is called again. So that's in a different story.
Probably was the top environment, I guess.
What?
In the TRK instruction, if we detect undersupply...
And we immediately return the functional value. Yeah. So now let's see what this test RK is in to do it in sequence. So here for the pop env, so if the number of arguments is exactly the difference between SP and FP is exactly k plus 1, then we have the value the value of the function application here on top of the stack. That means we do this pop env, and that means we restore the three registers here, and then simply return that pointer as the value. That's it. And in the case that we have an oversupply, then we squeeze out these k many arguments, so that now that this reference to the functional thing, to the functional object, is on top of this the stack k cells down in the stack, and then we call again, because then this is, we have a functional object on top of an argument, and then we call apply, and then apply will do the job for us. And what will the apply do? Recall what remember what it does. It kind of unpacks the functional object by putting the arguments which are or perhaps there already accumulated, pushes them on top of the stack, and jumps to the code for the function. And that then again will test for the number of arguments and so on, and do either execute the code or wrap everything up. That means prolongs the list of arguments inside the F object. Okay. So in that sense, this over and undersupply, kind of complicated the picture considerably. But by separating the complex operations like the test RK and the return K into micro instructions, we could kind of break it down, break everything down to very simple operations. So now there's one more thing which is of utmost importance, and that is recursive definitions. So without recursive functions, in functional languages, you can't do very much. So even the factorial function, the apply function, anything which makes sense is recursive. And if it were not recursive, otherwise it would terminate very quickly, in a type setting at least. Now, so our big question is, is there something special with recursive definitions? Let's see. So here is such a recursive definition. So we have, say, these y1 to yn, which all kind of are defined simultaneously. So this makes a recursive definition. So that means the e1 may contain the y1 and also the y2 and all of the variables. So it's the same variable environment which is applied for all the expressions e0 to en. Yeah. So that means, in particular, that when we evaluate the E1, we may already refer to Y2, which we have not yet seen. How can we refer to a variable which we have not yet created? So this is not possible. So the first thing, therefore, what we have to do is to allocate all local variables y1 to yn. Only then we can start to evaluate the e1 to en. Yeah. So after having allocated all the variables y1 to yn, then we can evaluate the right hand sides, and then now. Okay, then we have to bind the variables which we have already allocated to these new values. And, okay, so in the case of call by need, we do it a little bit differently. Then the right-hand sides E1 to EN are not evaluated, but only closures are constructed for them. And then the Ys are bound to these. And once that preparation has been done, then we can kind of continue and evaluate the expression E0. The crucial point is that variables are used or are allocated that in order to use variables which kind of have not yet been in, are not yet in existence, and we can only do that by kind of doing this allocation in such a way that we provide dummy values for all the variables. And then for the E1, we may refer to the dummy values of all the other of all variables in the let rec definition. And then later, when we provide values or closures, we override the dummies with the real values. So that's the idea. So here is how we would implement that idea. So we want to do the V code for this let rec definition. So in the call by need. What is the first thing what we do? The first thing is, as I said, we allocate the variables by providing dummy values for all of them. So this is this alloc n. Yeah. So it does not mean that only that we kind of increase the stack pointer by n. So we also have to provide something in the heap for each of these variables. So then in the end, after we have done with the definitions of the y1s, having processed the right hand sides e1 to en, then we do the code for the main expression e0, and then we afterwards we do the slide to slide n to give up all the locals. So that's kind of in the. Let me please explain it to the end, and then you may ask. But if you ask before, then I have no chance to explain, and then your question is vacuous. So okay. So the first thing is SD plus n. Why plus n? Because we have allocated n variables. So therefore, there is when we produce code for the EN, we know that the stack distance has increased by N. So the next thing which we note that there is this row prime. So the address environment for the main expression E1 is this row prime, and this row prime is obtained from the old address environment by extending it with the newly introduced variables Y1 to YN. And we know that all of these variables are local. All of them are local. And we also know their relative address, namely it is the stack distance plus I. So the Y1 gets stack distance plus 1, Y2 gets stack distance plus 2, and so on. Because we successively put them onto the stack Yeah, so that's the idea. So that now is the general thing, and then the only thing which now remains to explain is that portion. Okay, so we start with evaluating the first argument, and in the code V code, in the call by need environment, we construct a closure for the first right hand side, and we do that interestingly. So as it the address environment for the E1 is the same as for the E0, so it's still this row prime. Okay, and we do it with the stack distance plus n. Why? Because we have allocated these n dummy variables, and then we construct the closure. Okay? And now there's one more thing which we have to do. So we have now the dummy variables, and then this new extra closure for the first arguments. Now comes this instruction rewrite n. What would it do? It has on top of the stack a reference to a closure, and n steps down, there is a reference to a dummy, namely the dummy for the Y1. And then we take the closure value in the heap and copy it over the dummy, rewrite the dummy to the closure. Okay, so this is this rewrite n. And so on. Now, then we process the next the expression, E2. This is again, on top of the, below the E2 are still the n dummies. But now, we kind of construct the closure for the Y2. The distance from the current thing to the Y2 is no longer n, it is only n minus 1. So therefore we do a rewrite n minus 1, and so on. And in the end we arrive at the very last expression En, which corresponds to the Yn. So this is the topmost of the dummy variables, so therefore the distance is just 1. So therefore it's a rewrite 1 to override the dummy with the closure. So that's the explanation, and now come your question.
Can we have type changes for the dummy then?
What?
Do the dummies change their value type, or do we
know? It's just a dummy thing, so there's nothing in it.
Okay.
There's no type checking. So there's one thing which is which gives us a little bit of a headache. So if we do recursive definitions of basic values in a call by value environment, I write an example to you. Let rec x equals x in x. So very nice code. In order to check a compiler, you might very quickly write that, and you might want to see what happens. Now, what would OCaml do in that situation? It would try to evaluate that at runtime and would find, okay, so I have to look it up, and I have to look it up, and I have to look it up, and it would not terminate. So you are not allowed. So it's not meaningful. Recursive, or you could also. A little bit less contrived, you could write let x equals x plus 1 in x. So it's the same thing. You have to evaluate x plus 1, but for that you have to look up the value of x, which has no value and it will not terminate. So this means if you have a call by value functional language like OCaml, you are obliged not to use such kind of recursive definitions. They don't make sense, but recursive definitions only of functions. And so, in that sense, if you compute, let me just make another example. Let rec f fun x, and then you say just that one. Yeah, so this also will not terminate, but you can construct it. So it's meaningful because that means the or you kind of make it, let me just make it differently, kind of, so in one. So this is a meaningful code and it will terminate. Although the function f, if it were called, it would not terminate. But you can write it down and it would, so this let x equals x plus 1 in x would, or in 5, would not terminate. So this one, let x equals x plus 1 in 1 would not terminate in OCaml, although the x is never accessed, because that right-hand side cannot be evaluated. But here, this is the construction of a functional object that will terminate, because this will not jump to the to the code for the function. It will only create the functional object, and then it will return 1. So in that sense, such a recursive definition, so therefore, in that sense, this kind of indicates perhaps to you that if you have a call by value functional language like OCaml, recursive definitions only make sense for functions. Even, and these recursive definitions can very well introduce non-terminating functions. And if you never call these functions, this non-termination will never be never shows up. Yeah, but while in a lazy language like Haskell, you very well can write this code here is fine, because the right-hand side of the x will never be evaluated because x is never queried. So it just will return 1 and everything is fine. Yeah? So this makes a little bit of a difference. So clearly, this is kind of a little bit contrived. These are a little bit contrived examples. A OCaml programmer will never even think of writing such piece of code because it doesn't make sense. But in a Haskell world, this may make sense even. Okay. Yeah? So now I have tried to kind of indicate how this alloc and how this rewrite, what they do. But we have the precise implementations of these instructions we have not yet seen. But it doesn't matter for generating code, because for that these are kind of placeholders and we still may apply the scheme for generating code. And so here we may try to translate that kind of definition, and we can do it in a call by safely in a call by value for a call by value programming language, because here the recursive definition is of a function, and so that's fine. Yeah. So what would we do? Okay. So the first thing is, this is a recursive definition, so it is one thing which is done, and that is this f. So therefore, it's an alloc 1. And now we would construct the right-hand side of the... We would then now construct... So we can kind of construct the row prime. Row prime. What do we find inside row prime? So there's f maps to... Stack distance is 0 plus the number of the... local, so that is the first local, so that therefore f, that is the row prime for the f, for that expression. Okay, so now we have to construct the code for that beast. Okay, so this is a so we notice. This thing has, what are the global variables of this expression? The global variable of that expression is the f. Okay? So we have to make a global vector containing a reference to the global variable. So now, what is f? F has local relative address 1. Current stack distance is 1, so therefore 1 minus 1, we get hold of the f by doing push log 0. Okay, so then we make the vector of length 1, then we make the functional value, and then we jump behind the code of, we jump behind the implementation of the body of the function, and that is this B. And that B, this B is here. And I have, as you see, as you notice, I have kind of left out the code for the implementation of the body of the function. But I have only noted that it starts with test arc 2, and it returns and it terminates with a return 2, because this function has two arguments, namely x and y. Okay. After having constructed that functional value, I then do the rewrite 1. Why rewrite 1? We have one variable. This is overwritten. Then comes, now we are done with that, and now we continue with this call. And for that, we have to mark off a stack frame. So this happens in this place. And so C is the first address after that call, and then the first instruction after the call, and there we are done. The instruction after the call is when we are done with the whole let rec, and then we give up the local variables, therefore we have a slide 1 there. And now in this area, so let me mark it in yellow, this is the code for f applied to 1. And f applied to 1 is we first have to provide call by value, the value for the argument. That happens to be here. First we load a constant 1, then we make a basic value out of it. And then we have to access the f. The current stack distance is 5. The relative address of f is 1. 5 minus 1 is 4, therefore push log 4 will push a reference to the F on top of the stack, and then we do the apply. Okay? And note, in order for the recursive, if we have a recursive definition of some function F, then this F here is a global variable in the body of the function, and therefore will reside in the global vector. So now what does this instruction alloc n do? As we said, it creates n dummy closures. Here they are. And the closure consists of three components, the tag and a code pointer and a global pointer. And all these global pointer and code pointer are, we don't know, so therefore they receive some kind of initial value, namely minus 1, for example. Now, what does the rewrite do? The rewrite assumes that we have created here, this was the value for the, or the closure for the expression, say, E1. And down here, that one here, is a dummy. And then we copy the content, and that's important, the content of that data object in the heap into that data object. It is not so that we copy this reference into that reference. Why don't we do that? The point is that in the course of our evaluation of the right-hand sides, we have created references to this memory cell. And this is important. We have not created references to this new thing. So therefore, we can only override the content, but not the object. Because otherwise, we would have arrived at stupid things. So therefore, it is important that we do a copy of the content and leave the object as is, because it has collected references. Okay, and then after that rewrite thing, this kind of is consumed and kicked off, popped off the stack. Okay, so that was, now we have everything for up to the treatment of closures. We have mentioned closures, we have mentioned this C code, and we have this eval instruction, which we don't know what it really does. The only thing is, our intuition is, the eval takes a reference on top of the stack, checks whether it is a value. If it is a value, it does nothing. If it is not a value, it evaluates the closure to a value. Yeah? Yeah, it evaluates the value to a value, and that is done by kind of marking off a stack frame, doing the evaluation, it's kind of an intermediate computation, doing the evaluation, and then popping the stack frame afterwards. So here is therefore what the eval would do. And again, the eval is a complicated operation, so therefore we kind of decompose it again into smaller ones. So I like this micro instruction thing, because it helps me, it makes life easier to explain what the semantics is. So eval, as we have said, it checks whether the reference on top of the stack is to a closure. If this is the case, something happens. If this is not the case, then nothing happens. So therefore, we only have to consider the situation when there is a closure. And in this situation, I suggest to perform three operations. The first one is, we have to mark off a stack frame. And this is not a make mark A or mark B or what. So there's, so this zero indicates that this is related to the mark instruction, but the continuation address is provided implicitly. We do not have to mention it, make it explicit. Then, okay, so now we have the stack frame. Now then, is where are the arguments? Where is the functional object? So we kind of have no arguments. So we consider a closure as kind of a function without arguments. So therefore, we do not have to push arguments. We only have to push the reference which we want to evaluate. And then we kind of have to, we consider the closure as, so it has a code pointer, and that is the thing which we have to jump to, and that we kind of do a dedicated version of the apply. So therefore an apply zero. Yeah? So mark, once again, this mark zero, the mark zero is a version of the mark instruction, but where the code pointer, the continuation address, is passed implicitly, and the apply is similar to the apply zero, similar to the apply function, only that we do not have a functional value on top of the stack, but a closure. So now let's see what the mark zero does. So assume that the current PC is 17, and we have a current global pointer, and we have a current frame pointer. So now what would we do? What kind of things would we put on top of the stack? So clearly the current frame pointer, clearly the current global pointer, and now what is the continuation address? Well, it should be the next instruction after the eval. Now the question is, what is the next instruction after the eval? Okay, the next instruction after the eval is exactly what is written in the currently in the PC. Because there the PC has already been incremented, that is the label of the instruction after the eval. And that is where we continue after we have evaluated the closure. So that is, in this sense, very simple. We just take the current PC and put it here on top of the stack. So this is the mark zero. And now you understand why the eval does not need an extra parameter for the continuation address, we just take the PC. Okay, now comes the apply zero. This is the version of the apply instruction for a closure. So that means it expects on top of the stack a reference to a closure. And this closure contains two things. It contains a code pointer. Okay, this is a thing which we have to put into the PC. And it contains a global pointer. And this is the thing which we have to put into the GP. Yeah, and then we kind of continue. Yeah, and here perhaps one more thing. This mark zero sets the frame pointer. It sets the frame pointer to the current to the SP. We may check whether the original mark also sets the frame pointer to the SP. And where was it? Here. Yes, it not only marks off the stack frame but also sets the frame pointer to the current SP. Okay, so now we have I have shown to you what this mark zero does. It marks off the stack frame. Here the closure is put, a reference to the closure is put on top of the stack. Here the closure is unpacked, if you like, by setting the global vector and jumping to the code of the closure. Okay, so that was what we did here. And so here you see all together in by pictures. That is the situation which we have on before the when the eval is called. So we have a reference to closure on top of the stack. Marking of the zero will save on top of the reference to the closure. Set push the stack frame. Then push is a copy of the. So here is still. Please note that here we still have below the organizational cells the reference to the closure, but we put another reference to the closure on top inside the stack frame, on top of the stack. Then we do the apply, and this apply will kind of then prepare the. Will kind of set the global vector to the global vector of the closure and the PC to the start address of the code of the closure. And then the code of the closure runs. And then the end of the code of the closure has to make sure that the stack frame is popped and the reference. This reference down there, below, which originally pointed to the closure, that this closure here is overwritten with value for the expression. Yeah? That we must take care. And therefore, yeah. So accordingly, the code. For that we have to take care when we construct, when we generate code, closure code for an expression E. So here now comes the ultimate, the lifting of the ultimate, exhibiting of the ultimate secret. Now here is the general form how we create closure code for an expression E. So closure code for an expression E, what should it do? It consists, first we have to construct the, it consists of the code for constructing the closure. So this is this one. But also it must contain somewhere we must place the code which is then referred to inside the closure. So inside the closure, we have a code address for the code which will be called by the eval and which then will evaluate the closure, hopefully. And that, so it will evaluate the closure. It will evaluate the closure by evaluate the expression by some code V sequence for the expression E. So that means, in that sense, the code C for E contains somewhere also the code V for E. Only that when you construct the closure, you will not jump to it, but you kind of have must provide it, so that in case you really want to have the value, you get it. And that is not all. Following the code V for the expression E, we provide one more instruction, namely this update instruction, in order to override the closure with the value. Okay, so that was the overall idea of that code. Let us now go a little bit more in the detail. In order to construct the closure, we first have to wrap the global variables into a global vector. So that is, if assume that the variables, the expression E contains the variables set 0 to set G minus 1 as free variables, then we push references to all these variables on top of the stack, and then we make a vector out of it. Okay? Then we have on top of the stack the vector of the globals, and then we construct the closure by additionally putting the start address of the code for evaluating the expression inside the closure. And no more things we have to provide. So in that sense, this pair of instructions should closely resemble you to the corresponding sequence, which we also are together with that, for the corresponding sequence which we have used for constructing a functional value. It was the same in some sense, only that at that point here, we did not make a closure, but a function. So in that sense, we only... So that's the only difference. And there also, when we constructed functions, we jumped across the code, which was then to be evaluated, to execute it when the function was called. Okay? So that is, once again, the only new things which we see in that kind of code generating scheme for code generation is what does this make closure instruction do, and what does this update instruction do. So these are the only two new ingredients which we require here for the C code. And that is still, let us keep that as two dummy instructions which we need but which we do not yet understand, and see how the how that, if we have just an expression A times A and we construct and if we want to construct the closure code for it, when in an environment where rho is tells us that A is a local with relative address 0 and the current stack distance is 1, just to have some examples. And in that case, what would we have to do? What are the globals in that expression? The globals are, the global variable is A. So we push a reference to A on top of the stack. Why push log 1? Stack distance is 1. Relative address is 0. 1 minus 0 is 1. Therefore, push log 1 to access the A. Then we make the vector. Then we make the closure. And then we jump across the code for evaluating the closure and arrive here at the B. Now, what is the code for evaluating the closure? That is this portion here, this yellow portion. So now the A inside the closure code, the A is a global variable. Yeah, so this is a global variable, and so therefore we access the A by pushing by accessing global, and A there has, so it's kind of, if you like, a row prime saying that A is now a global with relative address 0. Yeah, so therefore we push, we make a push glob 0, then we are not sure whether A has already been evaluated, therefore we call the eval. We get the basic value, and then we have the value because we want to multiply. Then we do again a push glob, we do again an eval, and a get basic. Then we have the two arguments, A on top of the stack. Then we do the multiplication. That gives us the product as a value on top of the stack. Then we make it a value in the heap. And then we call this fabulous instruction update. So please note here that there is a little bit of extra stupidity because once we have accessed the A once and doing an eval, if we push it a second time, then we know already that it has been evaluated. So this eval could be cancelled. But this is kind of an optimization, so you might keep track of which global variables you have already evaluated, and then you can avoid a further call to eval. Okay, so we see here how the code looks like, and now let us briefly check what we would do for this make closure thing, but that is now according to our intuition that the same happens as for making a functional value, then it is clear. So we have this global vector on top of the stack. We put it here into the GP component of the closure. We have the A here, the A here, which we put as the code address into the closure, and then we construct the closure object. That's it. And what is the difference to the creation of a functional thing? The difference is that we have a different tag and we don't have to wrap an argument vector, an empty argument vector. Okay? So in that sense, this make closure is a very simple instruction. And for the update, now that is again then an interesting thing. So as I told you when I explained the eval, that eval will mark off a stack frame, here it is, and after evaluation of the, and then will jump to the code for evaluating the closure, the expression. So that is in the, after this code for evaluating the expression, a value, a reference to a value will be on top of the stack. Yeah? And then comes the last instruction inside, which was this update instruction. Now what will the what should the update instruction do? In essence, it should do two things. It should take the value here and overwrite the cell for the closure. And again, this is an override because there are other consumers of that closure, and they should all be they should all have the benefit of accessing the value and no longer the closure. So that we have to copy that value over there. And the second thing which we have to do is to kind of to pop off the stack frame, that is to restore the old registers. And these two kind of instructions can be kind of implemented by a sequence of two micro instructions. One is popping the environment. Popping the environment will result in that this reference is copied over there and the registers are restored. And then doing a rewrite one will kind of copy that content in here. So that is the combination of these two instructions, which are well known to us, suffice to implement these the update instruction. Okay, and that's it. So now you have seen the what we would do for the implementation. of the construction of closures and the evaluation of closures. So in that sense, our translational setting is complete, but we still would kind of take up your idea next time that in many cases it does not make sense to construct a closure because the value is a value is a value, and if I have the value, why should I construct a closure which in the end only provides us with a value which I already know? And how to do these kind of optimizations and how to deal with data structures, that we will look at next week. Thank you for your attention.